welcome to the worship service at the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Hayward, California, a multicultural church in the San Francisco East Bay that worships on the seventh-day Sabbath, Saturday. The ministry of the Word by Pastor Paul Penno is the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ to forgive sin and save from sin by his cross and ministry as priest in the heavenly sanctuary, the third angel's message in verity. Join us now as the service is in progress. And oh, let me remind you that our webpage is moving on March 1st to http://hayward.adventistfaith.org.
Our scripture reading today is taken from Psalms 31, verses 23 and 24, and I will be reading from the Clear Word version. Will the congregation please stand for the reading of God's Word? Love the Lord, all you his people. The Lord preserves the faithful, but he allows the proud to reap the consequences of their wickedness. So be courageous for the Lord, and he will strengthen you. Take heart, all of you who place your hope in him. You may be seated.
Our story begins in the third year of King Ahasuerus, known in history as King Xerxes. He was the king of the Medo-Persian Empire, the ruling power of the world at that time. In the third year of his reign, the king held a feast for all his officials and servants. In other words, the powers of Media and Persia. The nobles and the princes of the 127 provinces of his kingdom were stretched from the northwest frontier of India westward to the northern boundary of Ethiopia. The whole feast lasted for 180 days, with the final 7 days being a special feast for everyone who was presented there in the capital city of Susa, the fortified palace. The last feast was held in the court of the garden of the king's palace, and no expense was spared to make this a lavish occasion. The king provided all the wine in royal abundance, and it was served in gold containers to any guest who desired. The drinking was not compulsory, but undoubtedly the majority of the heathen guests took full advantage of the king's generosity. In the 7th day of the feast, when the king's heart was merry with wine, he commanded his servants to go fetch Queen Vashti, have her put on a royal robe, and parade her before all the king's male friends so that he could show off her beauty. Now it so happened that while the king was giving his party to all of his noble male friends, and in the palace garden, Queen Vashti was holding a feast for all the noble ladies inside the royal palace. No one knows exactly what the queen was doing when she received the royal summons. Maybe she was at the height of hosting her own party, or maybe she didn't like the idea of making a display of herself before all her husband's drunken guests. Whatever the case, she chose to do something completely unthinkable. She refused to obey the king's command. This was a serious offense to disobey a direct order from the king. Needless to say, the king was furious, and his anger burned within him. His queen had disobeyed his direct command, and he had done it in front of all his important guests. She had embarrassed him and caused him to lose face in front of his guests. He was wise enough, though, to seek counsel as what to do, what he should do with the queen before making any hasty decisions. His counselors urged the king to remove Queen Vashti from her royal position and give it to someone who was better than she. The king agreed and banished the queen from her position. To help save face on the political side, a letter was also sent out to all the provinces of the nation announcing that each man should be master of his own house and speak the language of his own people. Since the laws of the Persians and the Medes could not be altered, the king could feel that he had dealt with the situation and still remained his dignity as king of the greatest nation at that time. As time passed, the king got over his anger about what Vashti had done. His servants observed that the king was lonely for a former queen and was missing her. These loyal servants were eager to keep their king happy, so they came up with an idea of having a royal beauty contest, with the king getting the pick of the winner as his next queen. This idea must have been very flattering to the king, since he thought it was a great idea to give his hearty approval for the beauty contest to begin. Soon, beautiful virgins from all over the far-flung provinces in the nation of Medo-Persia were being selected and brought to the king's palace under the supervision of Haggai, the man in charge of all the virgins of the king's palace. The Book of Esther does not tell us whether the selection process was for the honor of voluntary or force, but whatever the case, Esther was among those taken to the palace. It must have been a frightening experience to be taken into the king's harem. One thing Esther knew for sure: she must obey Mordecai's instructions and keep it a secret that she was a Jew. She would be true to God of heaven, but she would not reveal her Jewish heritage.
My name is Haggai, and I am in charge of all the young women who have been brought to the king's palace here in Susa to enter the beauty contest run by the king. It's a rather demanding job, since I have to get each girl ready to meet the king. This involves a year-long process of beauty treatment and classes in the court etiquette. There are many rules of etiquette that each girl must learn before she is presented to the king. One of the most important rules is that she must never go into the king unless she has been invited or she could be instantly killed. Any person who ventures into the king's palace, into the king's presence without an invitation, is subjected to instant death. Unless the king should happen to be in a good mood and extend his royal scepter in welcome, it would not be wise to take that chance. Since these young women have come from all over the kingdom and come from many different backgrounds, it's my job to get them properly prepared to meet the king. One lucky girl will be chosen as the next queen of Medo-Persia, the current ruling power of the world. It's my job to check out each new arrival and assign personal maids to every to serve her along with her own private rooms and the beauty products that she will need to start using. Needless to say, all of the women are beautiful to look at, but some could use some help in the personality department. Some of them are rude, selfish, and greedy, and downright cruel to the servants that I have assigned them. I certainly hope that the king will see beyond a pretty face when he chooses a new queen. Having said that, I must say that I have also seen some wonderful candidates. There is one girl in particular that has really impressed me. Her beauty is impressive, but it's more than that. She has such a sweet heart, a sweet manner about her that is a pleasure to be around her. She is polite, respectful of others, and is so kind to the people around her. I could see great possibilities in her, so I have given her the best room and assigned more servant girls to serve her. She is a local girl from right here in the capital, and her Persian name is Esther, meaning star. She certainly has my vote if I were going to pick a queen. After each girl has completed her year of beauty preparations and court etiquette classes, I arranged for her to be presented to the king. As part of the process, each girl is allowed to take with her whatever costly garments and jewels from the king's storehouse to wear. When she is presented to the king, she is allowed to keep these items. When she is moved to the part of the palace where the king's concubines are kept, many of the girls see this as a one-time chance to increase their personal wealth. Some of the girls are so greedy that they almost bury themselves in jewelry, and it's a wonder that they could even walk under the weight of all that stuff. When it came time for Esther's turn to be presented to the king, I wondered what type of thing she would choose to wear. Imagine my surprise when she told me that she wanted me to choose what she should wear. I had already set aside a few choice pieces of jewelry that I thought she might like. So now I had the delightful task of planning for what she would wear. I selected choice materials from the king's storehouse and had the royal seamstress prepare a gown truly fit for a queen. Then I gave her just the right amount of simple jewelry to complete the finishing gown. She was a vision of lovingness, and her smile was a perfect finishing touch. Truly, she was a star worthy of the crown, and now she is ready to meet the king.
In the 10th month of the 7th year of King Xerxes' reign, Esther was taken in to meet him. When the king met her, he was immediately attracted to her. She found favor in his sight, and he loved her more than any of the other virgins. Thus, Esther was chosen to be the new queen. The king placed the royal crown on her head, and she became queen instead of Vashti. The king was pleased with the new queen that he gave her an inaugural ball in her honor and called it Esther's Banquet. He even proclaimed a holiday throughout his kingdom and distributed liberal gifts in honor of his new queen. During all this time, Esther kept her nationality and family background a secret, just as Mordecai had requested. Although she never verbally told anyone that she worshiped the God of heaven, her daily life was a witness to those about her of the God she served.
My name is Risha, and I am one of Queen Esther's personal maids, and I have had the privilege of serving her for the past few years. I have lived in the king's palace all of my life, and I have been especially trained to serve the queen. Her wish is my command, and I must say that it is a joy to serve her. Before the king had chosen his new queen candidate, the palace was a beehive of gossip. There was so much talk about what some of the potential queen candidates were like. Some of them had the potential of being very mean and cruel. So I was very nervous when I was told that I would be serving the new queen as one of her personal maids. This could be a life or death job, since if I should displease her in any way, she could have me punished or even killed. It was definitely in my best interest to learn all about the new queen and to try and figure out how best to please her. Since the queen candidates came from all parts of the kingdom, they also brought statues of their local gods with them to the palace. We servants quickly learned that it was wise to show respect to all of the many gods of the king's new concubines. It was hard to remember all the different gods we saw there in the palace, since there were so many of them. The gods came in all shapes and sizes, and we were expected to show our respect to all of them. When Esther was chosen queen, those of us who had been chosen to be her personal maids tried to figure out which god she favored. But no matter how hard we looked, we could find no image or altar where she worshipped. On occasion, though, we did find her kneeling at her bedside with her eyes closed. The first time I came upon the queen kneeling like that, it scared me half to death. I thought she was dead or gravely ill, but she opened her eyes and smiled at me. I was so relieved. I begged her pardon and asked if she were okay, and she told me she was praying to her God. Since I saw no image or altar, I asked her who she was praying to, and she said that she was praying to her God, and she worshiped the God of heaven. As time passed, we got to know our queen a little better. We learned that she prayed to the God of heaven each day. She was always so kind and caring to everyone around her that we decided it must be her God that made her this way. We started asking her questions about her God, and she taught us about the God of heaven. Before too long, each of us maids decided that we wanted to worship this God as well. As time passed, Esther became more than our queen. She was our friend, and we served her with love and worshiped her God. Now things have come to a crisis, and we fear for our queen. Over the past few years, Haman the Agagite has become the most powerful man next to the king. He is now the prime minister, and he just got the king to sign some new law that has our queen all upset. Just this week, the queen saw a man dressed in a sackcloth and ashes out near the gate of the palace, and she sent out a gift of a new robe for him to wear. But the man refused to accept the queen's gift. Instead, he sent her a copy of Haman's law and told her that she needed to go before the king and ask him to save the Jewish people. The queen sent back a message that it was against the law for her to go before the king without being invited, and that she could instantly be killed for doing it. The man sent back the strange message that maybe she had come to the kingdom for such a time as this. She sent the man a message asking for the Jews in the capital city to fast and pray for her, and she said that she and her maids would do the same, and then she would go before the king. She ended her message with, "If I perish, I perish." Needless to say, we were horrified at what our queen was planning to do. To go before the king without an invitation was truly asking for a death sentence. Who knew what mood he might be in? Besides, the queen hadn't been called to see the king during the past month, so who knew whether she was still in the king's favor? If Esther went before the king uninvited and the king did not feel like extending his scepter in her welcome, the queen would instantly be killed. There certainly was reason for fasting and prayer. We loved our queen, and we maids were most willing to fast and pray with her to the God of heaven to ask him to spare her life.
Haman's rise to power and favor with the king had put him in a position to carry out all old vendettas. As an adjutant, it has been his people who had been destroyed by Jews when David killed Goliath. So Haman's latent hatred for the Jews was aggravated every time he came through the palace gates and saw Mordecai, the Jew, refuse to bow down to him. As prince minister and second in power to the king had ordered all the palace officials to bow down before Haman. Everywhere that Haman went in the palace, the people would bow to the ground before him, and he liked it. But every time he came around the palace gates, there was this one lonely Jew who would not bow before him. The guy would either look the other way or hide behind a pillar, but he didn't bow. Each day, this became a bigger thorn in Haman's side, and his pride couldn't stand it. He finally decided to do something about it, but instead of just getting rid of one Jewish troublemaker, he decided to get rid of the entire race at one time. Haman was so sure that the king would grant his request that he even cast lots to determine what day would be suitable to carry out his wicked plan. Haman made his plans carefully. Then he went in to talk with the king. He presented his request to the king, emphasizing how getting rid of this certain group of people would, from his kingdom, bring in great wealth to the king. Haman didn't go into details, and the king didn't ask. The king trusted Haman and thought only of the wealth that would be brought to him in his treasury. He gave the royal ring to Haman to use it to sign the law, and told him that when all the property was confiscated, that he would manage it for the king. Haman wrote out the law that was the death sentence to all Jews, signed it with the king's ring, and then sent out royal couriers with copies of the new law in all parts of the kingdom. He must have felt quite pleased with himself once the law was sent out. As the law of the Medes and the Persians, it could not be changed. Here it was, second in power to the king. He was getting rid of his hated enemies, and he would have untold wealth as a result. What a deal. He would only have to put up with the hated Mordecai for a few more months.
My name is Mordecai, and I am a Jew who lives here in the capital city of Susa. When my aunt and uncle died, I took in my cousin, Hadassah, and raised her as my own daughter. She is the light of my life, and I nicknamed her Esther, the Persian word for star. She was a beautiful girl, and she has grown into an even more beautiful woman. When the king announced his beauty contest to search for a new queen to take Vashti's place, my Esther was chosen to enter. Before she was taken to the palace, I told her to use her Persian nickname and not to reveal her Jewish heritage. As a member of a conquered race, it would be better for her to keep her identity a secret, and Esther promised to obey. It was no surprise to me that she was chosen queen, since she is the most beautiful girl that I have ever seen. Every day I go to the palace gate, hoping to hear the news of the queen and to keep up with all the palace news. That's how I happened to hear about the plot against the king's life. I got the information sent into the queen, and she passed it on to the king. The information was found to be true, so the culprits were caught and punished. As the years have passed, I continue to keep my vigil at the palace gate in hopes of getting a glimpse of the queen. Recently, though, things have been going badly for me. Prime Minister Haman has risen in the king's favor, and the king has announced that everyone within the palace gates is to bow in reverence to Haman whenever he shows up at the palace. Since I refuse to worship anyone except the God of heaven, I've gotten in trouble for not bowing to Haman. It takes a lot of courage, but I remain standing whenever Haman appears. Whenever I see him coming, I try to hide, pretend that I don't see him. But Haman is very jealous of his status with the king, and has noticed that I'm not bowing down to him. He found out that I am a Jew, and he has decided to take out his hatred against all of the Jews, not just me. His ancestors, the Agagites, were conquered by the Jews during King David's time, so he has a long history of hating my people. Haman saw his chance to get even with my people, so he tricked the king into letting him write a law that would destroy all the Jews. Needless to say, this is devastating news for my people. I was weeping outside the palace gate, wearing sackcloth and ashes, when the queen saw me from her window and sent out a new robe for me to wear. I was in such sorrow that I couldn't accept her gift. Instead, I sent her a message asking her to go before the king to ask for his help to save the Jews. It's true that she would be going against the law of the land to go before the king without an invitation. But as a Jew, she would be subject to death as well. It was only a question of possibly dying now or definitely dying later. The queen recognized God's planning in placing her in the position of queen at this time in history, and she asked that the Jews of the city fast and pray for her for 3 days. She promised that she and her maids would also fast and pray, and then she would dress in her royal robes and go before the king without an invitation. Her ending message to me was one of great courage: if I perish, I perish.
The 3 days of fasting and prayer had ended, and now King Esther put on her royal robes and her royal crown to proceed towards the king's throne room. All eyes must have been on the beautiful queen as she stood in the doorway of the king's throne. Everyone watched knew that there had been no royal summons sent out to bring the queen here. Was she really going before the king without a royal invitation? There must have been a solemn hush as she approached. With all the royal robes on the queenly crown upon her head, she never looked more beautiful or more royal. What would the king do when he saw her? The silence in the throne room caught the king's attention, and he looked up to see the cause for the sudden hush around him. There, standing in the doorway to the royal throne room, was the vision of beauty and royal loveliness. His queen, his beloved Esther, had come uninvited to see him. He hadn't called for her in a month, and now here she was. With a smile on her face, the king held out his scepter and invited his beautiful queen to come closer. She gracefully approached the king's throne, touched the outstretched scepter, and bowed low before him. After the king got over his surprise, he asked his queen, "What was so urgent that you risked your life to come and see me? What is your request? You may have anything you want up to half my kingdom." Queen Esther's response was a strange one. "If it please the king, I would like to invite you and the prince minister Haman at the banquet that I have prepared for you this evening." The king was really curious now. His queen had risked her life to invite him to a banquet. She could have sent a lonely slave with his request. What did she really want? The king accepted the queen's invitation and sent word to Haman of the private dinner invitation with the queen. Haman must have been bursting with pride and excitement when he got the invitation. A private dinner party with the king and queen, what an honor. While Haman was glowing with pride and self-importance to be here at this private dinner, the king was concerned about Esther's request. As they ate their dinner, the king asked his queen again what her request was. Her response was, "If I have found favor in thy sight, will you and Haman come again tomorrow night to be my guests, and then I will answer your question." When Haman left the queen's quarters that night, he must have felt like he was walking on air. He had just a private dinner with the king and queen, and now he was invited to return again tomorrow evening. He was the most honored man in the kingdom. He was filled with happiness until he passed through the palace gate and saw Mordecai, who still refused to bow before him. His former joy was turned into rage. The king and queen had honored him with a private banquet, and yet his lowly Jew would not show him any respect and bow. When he got home, he was in a foul mood. He told his wife and his friends all about the king and the queen had honored him, and how he was invited to another banquet the next night. He complained bitterly about how all his honor was being spoiled by one Jew who defied him. His wife and friends suggested he build gallows near his house, and the next day he could ask the king for permission to have this Jew arrested and hung for disobeying the king's order to bow down to him. Haman thought this was a fine idea and gave orders for the gallows to be built. Construction on the gallows was started immediately. Meanwhile, the king was having difficulty sleeping. He must have been concerned about Esther's request and wondering what it was she really wanted. It must be something very important since she risked her life to come before him uninvited. But all she had requested thus far was for him to come to a banquet with Haman. And now she was waiting until another banquet before she could tell him her request. The king tossed and turned for most of the night. Then in the early hours of the morning, he asked for someone to read him from the record of his reign. Maybe having some old palace records read to him would put him to sleep. As the servant read the account of the assassination attempt on the king's life and about how Mordecai had uncovered the plot in time to save the king's life, the king interrupted the servant and asked if Mordecai had ever been honored for this deed. The servant responded, and according to the record, nothing had ever been done. It was now dawn on the king, someone in the courtyard. He wondered who would be out there at this hour, but it was Haman, who had come early to get permission to hang Mordecai the Jew. The king had Haman come in and ask his advice about what he should do for someone he wished to show honor. And Haman was so full of himself that he assumed that the king was talking about him. This was his chance. He had been honored in private by getting to dine with the king and queen, and now was his opportunity to be honored in public. He told the king exactly in detail how a person should be dressed in the king's royal robes and ride on the king's horse and be led through the city. Imagine Haman's honor when the king ordered him to do everything he had dreamed of for himself, but for his enemy, Mordecai the Jew. He couldn't refuse a direct order, so he spent the day leading Mordecai about the city in the manner he had coveted for himself. He had barely arrived home in shame when the palace servants arrived to escort him to the second banquet with the king and queen. As they were eating and drinking, the king asked again, "Queen Esther, what is your request? You can have anything you want, even half of my kingdom." The queen responded, "Your Majesty, I have found favor in your sight. Please save my life and the lives of my people. If we were to be sold into slavery, I would have not bothered you. But we are to be killed and our property taken from us." The king was immediately in a rage and roared, "Who dared to do this? Who gave the order?" Esther answered, "This wicked man Haman." The king stormed from the room and strode out into the palace gardens to regain his composure. Haman was terrified and knew that his fate was sealed. In desperation, he threw himself on Esther's couch and begged for her to intercede for him. Just then, the king backed into the banquet room and saw Haman on Esther's couch and cried out, "Don't tell me this man has enough nerve to attack my queen right in front of me in my own house." As soon as the king had shouted this outrage, the servants yanked Haman off the queen's couch and covered his face, a sign that he would die. Then one of the king's servants said, "Your Majesty, this man built a 75-foot gallows to hang Mordecai, the man who saved your life." The king responded, "Go hang him on the gallows." So they took Haman and hung him on the gallows that he had built for Mordecai. And that day there must have been rejoicing by the Jews in Susa at the death of their enemy. But God was not done with Esther just yet.
My name is Esther, the Persian word for star. King Ahasuerus placed this crown upon my head and made me queen of Medo-Persia, but it was the God of heaven who chose me for this position. Many other maidens could have been chosen to be queen, but it was the will of the God of heaven that I be chosen for this honor. When Haman's law was first announced, I was horrified. How could God let this happen to his people? Surely he would send someone to save his people. At the time, I had no idea that God planned to use me. Since I was in the palace and no one knew that I was a Jew, my life might be safe for the moment. But how could I bear the thought of Mordecai and the rest of my beloved people being killed? I hadn't even known that Haman's death decree for the Jews existed until Mordecai sent me a copy. He begged me to go to the king and warned that if I did not go and God saved his people in some other way, that my family would be disgraced and would surely die. And then Mordecai ended his message with this profound question: who knows but that you were chosen queen for such a time as this? This was no small thing that Mordecai was asking me to do. To go before the king without a royal invitation was truly risking your life. If the king saw you and held out his royal scepter, then you were safe. But if the king did not hold out his scepter in welcome, you would be instantly taken out of his presence and killed. With this scary thought racing through my mind, I considered Mordecai's request. His comment that God might have chosen me to be queen for such a time as this kept going around in my head as I tried to decide how to answer Mordecai. If God truly had chosen me for the position of queen for such a time as this, then surely he would go with me and give me the courage to stand before the king. I sent back the message to Mordecai to have the Jews in Susa fast and pray for my safety for 3 days. I and my maids, who served the God of heaven, would also fast and pray. And after 3 days, I would go in before the king. That was a very intense prayer meeting during those 3 days. The king had not called for me in 30 days, so I might no longer be in his favor. As my maids assisted me into my royal robes, possibly for the last time, I wondered if the king would hold out his scepter to me. If he did not, my death would be sure and swift. But if he did welcome me, what should be my request? Even though I was risking my life, this request was too important to make without proper consideration. And that was how my plan came about to plan a banquet for the king and Haman. As I stood there in the doorway of the king's throne room, waiting for him to see me, My prayers were to the God of heaven that he would use me to save the lives of my people and give me courage to stand before the king. Imagine my relief when the king smiled at me and extended his scepter in welcome. As I approached the king on shaky legs, I praised the God of heaven that he had given me courage to stand before the king. The next few days were momentous with the two banquets, Mordecai being honored, Haman's plot to kill me and my people exposed, Haman's death on his own gallows, and Mordecai being chosen as prime minister. Sometime later, when things had settled down, I risked my life a second time and went before the king, begging his help to save the life of my people. As I wept at the king's feet, I begged him to cancel Haman's law. But since the laws of the Medes and Persians cannot be changed, it was a difficult request for the king. He was moved with compassion and ordered Mordecai, who was also present, to write another law that would override Haman's law. So Mordecai wrote another law, sealed it with the king's own ring, and sent it out to all the kingdom. This new law gave the Jews in every city of the kingdom the right to organize themselves for self-defense. When the day came that Haman had intended to be a day of destruction for the Jews, instead, it was a day of death for the enemies of the Jews. God truly had chosen me to be queen for such a time as this. I praise the God of heaven that he chose me to be queen and gave me the courage to stand before the king to save his people.
Join us again next time for the Word of God, which will feed the soul. I am committed to bring you the fullness of the gospel as Jesus has revealed it to us in order to prepare a people for his soon coming.